Call this meeting in order.
Heavenly Father, we humbly ask you for the gifts of wisdom and courage that we make will make decisions that are right and just for citizens of Reading and who have entrusted us with the future of this community. We ask in Jesus' name.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Powell.
Here.
Mr. Bronner.
Here.
Mr. Bishop.
Here.
Mr. Boehner.
Here.
Mrs. Kroger.
Here.
Mr. Tomlin.
Here.
Mrs. Etichico.
Here.
Everyone's present. So before we get started, Mayor Bemis would have something he'd like to say.
Yeah, tonight as a city, we'd like to offer our deepest condolences to Rick and Karen Martin and their family, and hope all of you keep Rick and Karen again and their family in your prayers as they grieve the loss of a son. So anyway, I don't want to go any further. Just please pray for them all.
Approval of minutes from March 5th, 2024. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Got a motion by Mr. Boehner, second by Mrs. Etichico to approve the minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Minutes approved. Now we're on to guest speakers. Chief Brian Edens, please.
I was hoping you weren't going to fall.
I was asked to come tonight to answer some questions on the recommended flock camera system that we have recommended for the city of Reading. I do have a fairly short PowerPoint presentation for you that will probably answer most, if not all, of your questions. That's okay with everyone. I can see. With the putting in flock cameras, our target is to eliminate some crime and shape a safer future together for the city of Reading. Why flock cameras? What we observe, the current reality is limited police resources. We've talked about it. Crime is on the rise. We've had several weekends and weeks of some minor crimes that have turned into serious crimes. Trust is needed more than ever. And here's what we believe. That technology multiplies the force. The flock cameras can capture and distribute objective evidence to the right user. And it engages the community to support and grow. How the technology works. When you get flock, it's infrastructure free. We buy the equipment, flock maintains it. It's 24/7 coverage. It doesn't take a break as it's collecting data. It's in real time 24/7. There's no off time for it. On this system, the police department gets real time alerts. If a vehicle goes by it, it's a stolen vehicle. And what we would be doing is registering coming into the city, not leaving the city. That way, if it gets a hit on a license plate, it will alert our officers that are signed on in their system. They'll have an alert go off, and it'll show a picture of that vehicle that it captured. They can get in that area and be looking for that vehicle. If there's a serious warrant attached to a plate, it will alert that officer and allow him to be on the look for that. And all of this evidence is ethically made. There's no prejudices in it. There's no people involved. There's no facial recognition in it. It's not looking at people. It does not do traffic enforcement. It's indiscriminate. It's only collecting data on vehicles that pass it. It's a license plate recognition. It gathers objective evidence and facts about vehicles, not people. It alerts the police of wanted vehicles. G used to solve crimes and adheres to all state laws. What it is not, and this is an important thing with some of the public, it's not facial recognition. It's not tied to personal identifiable information. It's not used for traffic enforcement. It will not be used for red lights and stop signs and speed and things like that. When our officers do a search in the Flock system themselves, when they log into it, they have to put down a valid reason of why they're doing that search that is set up in our policies. Data that is not, that we don't go in and lock in to keep, is totally deletes after 30 days that nobody can get to. Mitigating risk, protecting privacy of people. Footage owned by the agency or the city and will never be sold or shared by Flock themselves. 30-day retention, as we just mentioned. The short retention period ensures that all data is associated with a crime is automatically deleted and unrecoverable if it's not related to a crime. It takes human biases out of the crime solving by detecting objectionable data and detecting events that are objectively illegal, say a stolen vehicle. That's in and of itself shows why we would be taking action on a vehicle. All data is encrypted out of stored. Again, as I mentioned, the search reason is required for the audit trail. It's not predictive policing. It's not used for traffic enforcement, not connected to the registration of the data. All they do is take the plate number. We have to go to a state system to get that information once we have the information from the picture. And which I'll show you in a little bit, there's also a transparency portal that we will be able to put up and show that we can hook a link from the city's website to it if people have questions about them later, that it will answer most of those questions. I'll show you an example of Lovelace. The transparency insights, it's customized for each agency, displays technology policies, it publishes usage metrics. Insights on the dashboard, measures crime patterns and your return on investment. I can get quarterly reports off of it to tell me what my guys are running and what the outcome of that is. And I know that was one of the questions 2 weeks ago was, how do we audit the outcome? What return on investment are we getting? We'll be able to do that quarterly to monitor, or are we getting a return on it? Is it just an investment that's not doing anything for us? And also, I can audit the search histories. If I've got a guy downstairs running things that he shouldn't be running, that we can't connect to any investigation or anything, then that's something that we deal with internally. The technology is used to eliminate crime. It's proactive real-time alerts when stolen or wanted vehicles enter the city. Investigative clearance rates increase, crime rates decrease. Flock cameras are a deterrent. Here's an example in the state of Ohio. This is currently, and I know it changes probably weekly, this is a list of the departments in the state of Ohio that's already using Flock cameras. And no, I haven't counted them, I don't know how many's there, but it's quite a list, and you'll see a number of them right around this county that border us. I know Blue Ash, Evendale, Amberley are all listed on there. Case study from a robbery from Ontario. They received a call from an employee of Best Buy stating four subjects stole expensive products, fled the store, brandishing a handgun. Witness described the vehicle, was searched in Flock safety with to identify the vehicle. Detectives issued a bolo. A Detroit police officer spotted the vehicle and initiated a traffic stop and arrest on it. Another one on a homicide. I'm gonna skip a couple of these. Here's one in Dayton, Ohio. A man was shot and murdered by a known individual. Suspect fled in a stolen vehicle. Dayton officer used the recently installed Flock cameras reader system to find him. If we run a license plate in there, everybody that has, we get access to all the other people who may have that technology in their town. If that vehicle hit on other areas, it will tell us and give us a picture of the, what it captured. It can kind of give us bits and pieces of where we're going to find this person. There's a case on a child abduction at 12:30 at night. There was an Amber Alert issued for a stranger abduction for a female and her child. Search conducted with the flock safety a half hour later. Vehicle was located at 2:30 the next afternoon. By 5 o'clock, they did a felony stop on it, and the baby and mother were reunited because of, so, you know, in 18 hours, it was resolved. And a lot of it was credited to the flock system. And I have one other piece I want to show that I told you I was going to show you here. Now, this is a shot of the transparency portal for Loveland, Ohio. It gives an overview of what the cameras are, the technology, what they do with it, and then a lot of questions that the public may have in this. What's detected with them? It tells them, you know, vehicle fingerprint. Not literally fingerprints, but license plates, vehicle make, color, where it was last seen at, date, time, number of days seen. What's not detected? It doesn't do facial recognition. People, gender, or race. There is an acceptable use policy within the department, and that the data that we retrieve and keep is owned by the department. It's never sold to anyone else. Prohibited uses of the camera system. Immigration enforcement, traffic enforcement, harassment or intimidation, usage based solely on a protected class, race, sex, religion, or for personal use. Somebody trying to track their wife or something like that is not a proper use of this system. Anybody that does go in and do a search in here, that system is, or that information is saved and is retrievable indefinitely by the host agency of it. Hot lists, like national system, things like that, stolen cars. If they get a hit on that, that's when the officers that are logged in within that area get a notify and a picture of the vehicle that they seen. All data that is not earmarked or kept, used for anything, is a retention of 30 days and then it's gone. We're not tracking people like that. And then it will tell people how many cameras that the town owns, how many searches that our officers have gone on and done in the last 30 days. And there's the hot list alerts. And then down at the bottom, additional info, as you get positive hits and positive outcomes, you can put those in there, show the outcome that you're getting from the cameras, your return on your investment there. Now, there was a question last week or 2 weeks ago. These cameras are not mobile. They can't just be thrown up one place and then moved to another. Well, most of them are mounted on infrastructure unless you have special poles put up. They're up where the traffic lights and such are at. They stay there. If you would have something happen to one, or if we get one that we're not getting any kind of positive feedback from, and maybe we restudy it and we want to relocate it, then maybe then, and we have flock do that. But they're not like the traffic trail that I move around to different places. They're put in there, they're meant to be in a permanent place. Any questions?
On the when they install these the equipment, I guess is the city involved in that decision of where they go?
Yes.
And notify that they're installed.
They did an original study for me. I asked them for their recommendations, mm-hmm. what they would do, because obviously they know more about this than I know.
And which poles, and they that's and all identified.
They look and see one. It has. We looked at and identified traffic poles that they could go on. City infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
Because there was one pole they recommended, and it's an old ODOT pole that we would have to go to them and have permission to put it on their infrastructure.
do you have to pass an acceptable use policy in the department, or is there already one? You have to do that, okay? And the other question was, on the when the officers log in, is this done on the buddy system where there's two doing it?
No.
Can a single officer log in?
Yes, but he has to go in with his password, and I believe there may be a two-part verification who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these systems are going to that type of a login. And then there's an audit trail of everything you do.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Powell.
You had mentioned that, like with stolen vehicles, that they would enter the jurisdiction, that you guys receive notification. Do you have to be logged in for that to go on, or is it a push notification?
No, it goes to the officers that are logged in on the MDC system. It goes to their in-car computer system.
You okay.
Give them an alert, because otherwise it's going out to the cloud. And
gotcha.
So
they would have to be logged on to the system. Will that be part of the protocol when they're out in their cruiser for them to
be
logged?
They have to be logged in, just like they are on every ship.
Okay.
It goes into that system.
It does. Okay, good.
Mrs. Chico.
So this is non-flock camera related, but we talked earlier, and I warned you what I was going to ask, but there's been talk of it lately. And just for you to clear up that we don't run off of a quota system, but we do have an accountability system for the officers.
We do not have, a lot of some people who don't like to go out and do their job might call it a quota system.
Mm-hmm.
We have expectations of our officers, and we have had expectations, as any employer has. The public has a right to have expectations of their police department, as they do of you folks up here. You folks have right to have expectations of what I do and what this department does. There is a point system. Point system is 5.5 points per day. And that's a 12-hour shift. And they receive points for if they're taking a report, if they're making a minor misdemeanor, a misdemeanor, felony arrest, if they're writing citations, if they're serving a warrant. It's a cumulative of everything, the overall totality of their job. And at 5.5, to tell you how simple that is, with an expectation of 5.5 points per day, if they go out and write a citation, that's 2 points. If you write a citation and you send someone on their way, 10 minutes is kind of a long time for a traffic stop. You can go out in an hour and satisfy what's expected of you for a day. That's a low bar to hit. And you know, in our community, while some people who see crime, witness crime, or happens to them, that's what their emergency is for the day, the crime prevention. Other people, as you folks sit up here and or watch the social media, traffic is just as important to that person making that complaint. And we have to come up with a meeting of both enforcing traffic and crime and criminal crime at the same time. That they're both safety. And both just as important in their own rights. Just like OVIs. OVIs cost this county, cost lives, dollar values, just as much as anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And in my career of over 32 years, there's officers, some kind of gravitate and like doing criminal enforcement. Others kind of gravitate toward traffic enforcement. And there's nothing in this that says you will go out and write 3 tickets a day, which is what was alluded to this past weekend. There's no number on any of it that says you will have this number of this.
Right.
Nobody's ever been expected to write 3 tickets every day. It's very easy to do, but, and it's just as important, but just like tonight, our officers that came in at 6 p.m., they were briefed on reports that were taken this morning. We had several vehicles broken into last night throughout this valley. And with videos we collected today, none were good enough to actually identify the subject, but we have a good idea what this person looks like, and third shift is looking for this person to be moving tonight. And that goes on daily. You know, if you day shift comes in and they're busy in the morning taking report in an area, that's all passed on to the next oncoming shift. They're out looking during that day, but it's also passed on to the shift for the next shift. All the supervisors look and are to be telling their guys what went on in the 12 hours that they were gone, preceded them, and what they need to be looking for. But no, the system, it's, we have a right to have expectations of these guys, And I'll be the first to tell you that there are officers that if we didn't have expectations, they wouldn't do anything. They'd drive around, drink pops, and wave, and never write a ticket, and never make a criminal investigation. That's the reality, and it's in every profession, it's not just in law enforcement.
Kind of a follow-up on that, you and I had had a conversation as well about this, and one thing I want to say that you had told me about, that this point system is one of multiple metrics that are used to measure the officer's performance. This is not exclusively.
The numbers for their productivity is 1/10 of their overall evaluation. It's 1/10 of it. The rest of it, you know, is criminal investigations. Are they completing them? Are they doing them in a timely manner? I'd have to get the sheet to lay it right out in front of me, because the evaluations are done by their immediate supervisors and then signed off on by myself. But they, like I say, this productivity thing came up. We have had this in place at least the last 15 to 20 years. When we were on 8-hour shifts or 8.5-hour shifts, it was 3.5 expected daily point average. And that's an average. That's not, there may be a day that you don't, not much going on, and you're not hitting that mark. But that's an average. You get a quarterly review. If you're not hitting your mark, you're advised at that time you need to pick it up. You go along first, second, third, and fourth quarter, then the yearly review is just an average of all four quarters. And that's the one that really matters. What have you done the whole year? Because your first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, you will have recommendations there from your supervisor or myself, to say that you're missing the mark here, you need to do this, or you know, it's something you need to cover. Then we're looking toward the end of the year, have you taken that advisement, have you made changes? And we may even ask you, I want you to write me a plan of action of what you're gonna do to correct this, to see if you're open and wanting to do that. Because all of these officers, you know, they're sworn in when they do the job to do the job to the best of their abilities, and that's what's expected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Tomlin.
I was just going back to the cameras. I was curious how many we intend to get.
Right now, it's 4. Their recommendation was 14, which we looked at a year and a half, 2 years ago. And that was a substantial amount as compared to where we're at now. And we can see what the return investment is on the 4. And then we can add as we go along. The cameras are about, they cost $3,000 a year per camera, plus putting in. So start up on this, it's a 2-year contract to start with, $12,600, maybe some other things that fluctuate a little bit. That's why we said not to exceed $15,000 for the first contract. And that includes your first year, $12,600 startup, and then the second year is a $12,000 contract. During that time, if it's going fantastic, then maybe we revisit and we can add to it. But at the end of the 2 years, we really look at it, and if we're not getting the return that we expected or we're not seeing anything positive, then we can, you know, separate our ways with it.
How has the reception been from other departments? Are they finding it very useful?
Yes, sir. And we have found them very useful with neighboring departments. We have went to them when we asked some information, because you know, we all work together doing the same job. We get a car that's left here and went north into Evendale, and we knew it went that way. We've called up there and they've run some stuff for us. Amber Village has done the same thing. Blue Ash has done the same thing. And sometimes it's just an officer who knows someone. We've had other departments run some stuff for us too and had some positive outcomes already from that.
As someone who's totally against traffic enforcement cameras, are these cameras limited to their ability of what they do?
They're
in terms of what they're doing?
Collect data.
That's what they do?
That's
okay.
That's all they're there for. There's other technology that this company does offer that you could have shot spotter, where like if you hear Cincinnati on the news every once in a while, they got what's called shot spotter. They have placed microphones throughout the city, and if they detect shots, they detect the area that it's come from and try to zero in on, and send an automatic dispatch out to Cincinnati to go to that area. And they have found several people shot the way that they never got called. Now, that's not a technology we're looking at doing.
Right.
But it's other technology that they do make.
Any other questions or comments? Great. Thank you, Chief Edens. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Chief.
Thanks, Chief.
We're on to audience asking participation. We do have one pre-registered, which is Tim Wilkinson. Would you mind stepping up? You have 5 minutes. Please state your name, which we already know. And once you're finished, please return to your seat.
Nope. I'm charging.
All right, so a few of my questions have already been answered by the PowerPoint presentation. With the flock cameras, I know they've been banned in two other states. Obviously, with that being said, with those cameras and being installed, are they going to be permitted? I know they're on government property. Are they going to be properly installed to the fullest extent of the building department? That's one of my questions. Because I know in other cities they've hit other utilities and et cetera. So that's just one of my concerns. The next one is with the logging that I've seen that in the PowerPoint presentation. Is that logging information going to be brought to council once a month of how many times that they've used the actual equipment or logged in for general cases? So if it's like, oh, we used it 50 times, great. 50 times we used it, is that those cases, how many of those were actually solved? Like one, two, three. I don't know if there's a return on investment on the information coming back. The other thing is that I wanted to say is the trash along the railroad tracks has been cleaned up and it looks great. Giving kudos all out for that. And that's all I have.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it, Tim. Any questions or comments? Chief Eanes?
The system will be set up to do quarterly reports from when our officers, what they put in. When they put in, they have to put the reason they're running it and what the outcome it is. And then when I download a report, that will all come out and I'll be happy to pass that along. And if you look at the last thing that I showed there, report, it shows you in there how many queries they run a month. We have to put that data in, but it will show you what they're doing, how many vehicles were detected is on there, and how many queries that officers have run. And then at the bottom, if we're having positive results out of this, we'll put a little narrative there to show that it what kind of a positive outcome they had out of it.
Okay, but is that going to be brought to council that we can have those numbers ready?
I can forward it to the safety committee.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say if you want to add that to the report.
We can add that to the report I already gave her.
The general residents know how many times it's being used.
That's we already do a monthly report.
Correct. And I'm just asking, can that be added to it?
Yeah. So, but I think what he was saying also is, like how Loveland has is Loveland's directly connected on their website. Like if
they put a link there, it'll take you right to that.
Yeah. So you can, as a citizen, can get on our website. There'll be a link to see all of that data that he just showed you from
that website.
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's answered my questions.
Great. Thank you, Tim.
Any other questions, though?
Thanks a lot. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Ed.
Do we have anybody else asking to speak? Anyone else? Okay, we're moving on. Reading of communications. We have anything?
No.
All right. No executive session scheduled. No reading of resolutions. So we're on to reading of ordinances.
This is a second reading, an ordinance authorizing the safety service director to purchase and install 4 flock camera systems and declaring an emergency.
Any discussion?
Motion to suspend the third reading.
Second.
Okay, I got a motion by Mrs. Kroger, second by Mr. Boehner to suspend the rules requiring a third reading. Roll call, please.
Mr. Powell?
Yes.
Mr. Bronner?
Yes.
Mr. Bishop?
Yes.
Mr. Boehner?
Yes.
Mrs. Kroger?
Yes.
Mr. Tommen?
Yes.
Mrs. Edichico?
Yes.
All right, 7 yes. Suspension carries.
Move to adopt.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Boehner, second by Mr. Bronner to adopt. Roll call, please.
Mr. Powell?
Yes.
Mr. Bronner?
Yes.
Mr. Bishop?
Yes.
Mr. Boehner?
Yes.
Mrs. Kroger?
Yes.
Mr. Tommen?
Yes.
Mrs. Edichico?
Yes.
Ordinance passes. Ordinance number, please.
2024-11.
On to miscellaneous business. Mrs. Edichico.
Yes, I wanted to take a minute here regarding the Community Development Block Grant. I was thinking tonight during miscellaneous business would be a good idea, before we have our public hearing, for everybody to kind of throw out maybe some suggestions or idea if we were to get that grant money. For starters, my top two are the acquisition of blighted properties and the public facilities improvement, mainly the stadium. I can think of three blighted properties right off the top of my head that this grant money could be used to purchase and demolish. These are properties that have been condemned or should have been condemned and are well beyond repair. I believe they are a safety hazard and definitely a blight on the neighborhoods. As far as the stadium goes, we all know this has been a long topic of conversation. We have discussed improvements to the facility in the past. We've talked about redoing the field, including making it regulation soccer size, which I think is important. I am not a sports person, but I've been to a lot of games because of my kids, and years ago it was all about turf. But it does seem like more fields are going back to grass, which I'm good with that. I do know that the field as it is now does need work. I'm no expert at this at all, but I know what I've been told by players, past and present. There's a lot of weeds, a lot of blank, muddy spots, and the field has a high arch to it, is what I'm told, like a rolled ankle waiting to happen on the edges. Considering the cost of turf, I think it would kind of maybe equal out to regrade the field, enlarge its size, reseed or sod, and add irrigation, but no expert. It would definitely take some looking into. I also think that redoing the track is badly needed. The track is not only used by residents, but our schools for practice. Other schools are using our track as practice as well. I know that we have folks from Glendale coming here to use the track for their youth teams for practice. And I've said in the past that our stadium is a place where we welcome visitors from all over, and it gives them the impression of Reading. That's what most people see when they come here. I'm not just saying this because my daughter is running track now, but there are spots on the track that is dangerous. Because of this, we can't hold meets at our stadium. I definitely think that's something to look into. Whether or not we use the grant money on the stadium, I think it's a good time to start looking into it, looking into adding the possibility of handrails, ADA accessibility. I know there have been improvements made. I believe the bathrooms have been redone. We've talked about doing fencing, creating a more inviting entrance, but I think it's a good time to kind of get the ball rolling on this one way or another. But those were my ideas for the CDB money. Anybody else has any?
Yeah, Mr. Bronner?
And I agree with the blighted properties. I think that's something that's overdue. Patrick did mention an amount of $175,000 could be around the max. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how far that would actually go as far as stadium improvements go. That might do some fencing, maybe some handrails, some things along that line. As far as the field, you know, it's probably not even going to come close to scratching the surface of getting the turf installed there. And you did mention the grass, and, you know, there a lot of fields are going back to grass. But for our purposes, the reason for the turf would be more use. You know, we can get more teams on the field and, you know, have more people enjoy it, you know. Track, the you know, making that usable. I didn't know there was Glendale people using the track as well. I mean, that's... Mm-hmm. Gets a lot of usage, and that being a city-owned facility too, you know, something else that is unusual in the state. But I think it bodes well for our residents, you know, to be able to have access to it at all times. So, but I was wondering, I was looking at the qualifications for the CDBG grant, and that Rally's property has been sitting there now for a long time, and you know, it's. I would consider that to be blighted. You know, that's looking terrible. And if there's a way to use some of that money to maybe attempt to purchase that, I don't know that the owners would be willing to sell. But I mean, that'd be something to look into and have some city control over. You know, that particular corner there.
Yeah.
Right. Mr. Bishop.
Given the cost of tearing down a blighted property these days, I think if it's only about $170,000. I think that's a couple of blighted properties, and that's about the extent of it. And I think getting those down is probably the most important thing we could probably look at. They have to come down eventually, and you know, if that money's there to use that for that, that's probably a really important thing. And then we could look at other things later.
Okay. Anybody else on August?
I've talked to Katie. That we both saw a blurb either on the news or in a newspaper about grants for condemned property. At this point, we only have one house has been condemned, probably going back 7 years or something like that. There's a few more that, but I think in order to get that grant, the building has to be condemned. And so we probably have to do that, and some of the other ones are in bad shape. But I would prefer to, in a couple of cases, they need to be condemned and torn down. But in the vast majority of cases, it'd be better if the city could buy it and offer to sell it to somebody as long as they live there for 5 years. Because we could get use out of that building if somebody decided they wanted to fix it up and not flip it, but they have to live in a house for 5 years. Laughlin did that for many, many years to clean up some of their dilapidated property. My thought on the CDBG money was to initially purchase new playground equipment at Flagey Park, because that seems to be a problem. And there seems to be a lot of new people up in that area. So that park seems to me would get a lot more use than it has been in the past.
With that, Mr. Boehner, I met with contractors just this weekend, Flagey Park, Cherryfield Park, and Hilltop, looking at replacing the smaller playground sets. Department of Natural Resources has a Nature Works grant that reimburses up to 75%. So that deadline's coming on June 1st. So we plan to go in that direction to cover the cost of the majority of the cost of those.
Okay. Great. Mr. Powell, I believe you had some.
You know, from my perspective, anything we could do to get rid of blighting influences is something we need to do, because you know, it seems to me there's certain areas of town and certain streets that it's kind of on the brink where it could tip and go one way or tip and go the other. And I would like to definitely see it come back and lose the blighting influences. But I also like anything, if we could get rid of blight and promote economic development as well, that's, in my opinion, a win-win. So, I mean, I have some specific stuff in mind, but I'm going to kind of keep that powder dry, because it's amazing that if you talk publicly about a specific property, how much the price can go up then. So,
anyone else?
Well, just my input in. We have a history of using CDBG for economic development, so something to be considered too. There's plenty of great considerations, that's for sure. But that's been the past, several parking lots so businesses could thrive. You know, we've taken down buildings, and so anyway, it's always one to think about as well.
Right. Anyone else? Any other miscellaneous business?
I've got a few things to announce.
Sir Bronner.
First of all, I'd like to make an announcement that the city offices will be closed on March 29th. And that also includes the tax office. For those looking to get their taxes done, make a note that the tax office as well will be closed on March 29th. Also, I would like to announce that we are having a finance committee meeting be next Wednesday, March 27th at 7 p.m. And we will do it in the, we'll do it here in council chambers. Why not?
Okay, great. Anyone else? Mr. Powell.
I'd like to announce that I have scheduled a Zoning, Planning, and Environment Committee for 6:30 p.m. I think we'll go ahead and do it here in Council Chambers for Tuesday, April the 2nd, 6:30 p.m. We're going to attempt to get the proposed changes to the zoning code back on track. I know it's been several years since we were working at that. It kind of got derailed, whether it was COVID or whatever derailed it. So I'd like to get that back on track. So we're going to schedule a meeting to begin discussing that.
Okay, great. Thank you. Mr. Boehner.
While we're talking about committee meetings, remind people that the Service Committee is meeting next Tuesday night at 7 o'clock here in Council Chambers. I have the notices. I'll be putting the notices out the next 2 or 3 days. People have been asking about me for about 2 weeks, and I told them I've got it. And thanks to the police chief and the speed trailer, we got about 5 weeks or so of traffic data to look at, and it is interesting to see what in the last 4 weeks we got, what we had, and I made some notes on that because that report's about 11 or 12 pages long, so the first one was about the same way. So I skimmed through it, looked at the ones that were doing 35, which ones are doing 45, and I think this last, we did have somebody do almost 60. And most of the high speed on Furman Road is after 9 o'clock. I don't know if you noticed that, Chief, at all, if you looked at it. There's been a few people speeding in the morning, dropping their kids off at school and heading to work, or speeding to school 7:30, 8 o'clock. There's a few, but not near as many. The higher speeds are at after 9 o'clock at night. And quite honestly, talking to some of the people up on Furman, they think it's the same kid that is doing it. And I said, well, you know, you get a license plate number and make it a car, all you got to do is call the police department. You know, I mean, that's all you got to do. I mean, I don't understand. You know, complaining to me is not going to do anything, because I can call the police chief anyway, but I don't have that information. But if people see somebody speeding or seeing some sort of suspicious activity, you need to call the police department. You know, we had a car last week drive up and down Siebenthaler over an hour about 8 or 10 times, and it turns out they're looking for a house right across the street from my house. I don't know what they're looking at, but they drove right by it. I mean, but there is a lot of strange things going on all over the city, not just in the valley. It's all on the hilltop. And people need to take some responsibility and call the police department if they see something that's out of whack, because you might save one of your neighbors a lot of problems.
All right, thank you. Any more?
Just on that note, the police, calling the police, the non-emergency line for the county is 513-825-2280. That's a non-emergency number that will, when you call the county, that will connect you to Reading and get you dispatched for whatever you need. I know over the weekend there was a lot of things about, you know, not having dispatch or whatever, not having the number. The number again is 513-825-2280.
All right, thank you. Any other miscellaneous businesses?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion to adjourn by Mr. Tomlin, second by Mrs. Kroger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned.